Welcome, everyone, to the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. I am Nima Vedati out here in Austin, Texas. We've also got Michael W. Dean out there in Wyoming. Yeah. How you doing, Mr. Dean?
I'm excellent, Nima Vedati. I'm excellent, I'm feisty, and I'm broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America.
That's good, because the NSA is trying to monitor your every move. We've actually got a special guest to talk to us a little bit about that and some other things that his great organization is doing. We've got Daniel Naser with the EFF, which I like to say is a Freedom Lovers BFF. I'm going to read his bio here. Daniel Naser is a staff attorney on the Electronic Frontier Foundation's intellectual property team. He focuses on patent reform. Prior to joining EFF, Daniel was a residential fellow at Stanford Law School's Center for Internet and Society. He also practiced at Kiker and Van Nest LLP, where he represented technology clients in patent and antitrust litigation. Daniel served as a law clerk to Justice Susan Kenney of the Federal Court of Australia and to Judge William K. Sessions III of the District of Vermont. Daniel has a BA in philosophy from the University of Western Australia and an MA in philosophy from Rutgers and a JD from Yale Law School. Pretty impressive rap sheet there. Daniel's also the author of The Tragicomedy of the Surfers Commons and Conflict and Solidarity, The Legacy of Jeff D. When he's not working, Daniel can be found surfing at San Francisco's Ocean Beach. Are you there with us, Mr. Naser?
I am. I'm glad to be on the show.
Excellent. Now, give us a brief rundown for people who maybe have never heard of the EFF. What is the EFF? Why are they so important, especially this day and age?
Yeah, so the Electronic Frontier Foundation, we're a digital civil liberties organization. Our mission is to make sure that your constitutional rights follow you online. So the EFF was actually founded all the way back in 1990 by some really forward-thinking folks that realized that the courts and legislature were not really understanding the internet, which was sort of on its way, and computer issues, and that we needed a group devoted to protecting people online.
I have a theory that without the EFF, the internet would either be illegal or it would be mandatory, but every website would be government only and work like the Obamacare website. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, well, we certainly think we've done a lot of good over the years. One thing we recently did was we beat this legislation called SUPA that would have made it really easy for people to take down websites they didn't like based on copyright complaints without even going to court. And it would have really reduced, I think, the amount of freedom online. And there's been a lot of hard battles. We certainly haven't won all of our fights, but we think Daniel, we're part of a movement that keeps freedom online.
Well, I think a lot of people's fear with SOPA is that a lot of the bad things from the SOPA legislation will find its way into other bills, maybe even flying under the radar. Do you think that's something people should be concerned about? And if so, is the EFF? I mean, I imagine you guys are constantly monitoring new legislation for stuff like that. Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. And the government is making the administration's really making noise about they want to have a big copyright act sometime in the next 6 years. And it seems to be tied to the next to when things are going to start going into the public domain again, and which will be in 2018. And so they want big reform by then. And big question is going to be whether they actually extend the copyright terms again to 150 years or whatever. But as part of that, I think a lot of the SOPA-like proposals will be in there. Another thing that's happened is they've done public partner-private partnerships. They're really trying, the government is really trying to get the big ISPs to monitor things on them by themselves. And we find that a little worrying that when the folks who provide you internet service are basically being asked to be the copyright police.
Isn't there a bill pending or a plan for a bill pending that would use copyright law to prevent people from selling used media, like you selling used records online or used CDs online, or selling I've heard it could be taken to where you couldn't even buy a used paperback for a dime at the Goodwill.
That I haven't heard of. And I think hopefully first sale of physical goods is pretty well established. And that's something we definitely defend. We actually litigated a case where a record company sued a guy who was selling promo CDs online. And he was buying these promo CDs in secondhand stores and then selling them on eBay and making just a few bucks. And the record companies, basically they're kind of like the gremlins or they think that if they made it, it belongs to them forever. And we did win that case in the Ninth Circuit. So the interesting question of first sale is really digital goods. So it's turning out now that more and more stuff has software in it. So when you buy it, you license it rather than buy the software. And so that's been true of like your phone and increasingly, you know, your car and your washing machine. All this stuff is going to have software in it. And the question, it's a really open question, how much control we're going to have over the goods we buy in the future.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Creative Commons. Do you guys do a lot with that?
Yeah, we partner with them a fair bit. You know, I think what they do is fantastic, and they certainly provide. So for listeners who aren't familiar with Creative Commons, they draft licenses that are much more permissive, that it's easy for you to use, and helps other people share your work without making it such a pain to deal with all the copyright law. And so we all of our blog posts, for example, are licensed under Creative Commons licenses.
Yeah, that's a really good thing if you have a mission, like you want to reach the world. I remember hearing this libertarian radio show from about 25 years ago. It was one of the first ones. It was actually on shortwave, and there's a recording of it on YouTube, like audio only with a picture. And the guy said a lot of the same things that we talk about here on the Freedom Fiends, but I was kind of astonished that the first thing out of his mouth was like, "Greeting, patriots. This is the such and such show, and I want you to know that this is covered by copyright, and no one has any right to reproduce it without direct written permission." And I'm thinking, like, you're talking on shortwave radio in a time when most people don't have the ability to record you, and you're telling people not to share it. That is not a way to get a message out. Here on the Freedom Fiends, we put everything out Creative Commons. We sell copies of it too, and make money at it, but also give it away, which is great if you want to spread a concept.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, it's funny, often people make these copyright messages and they say you can't copy any of this without permission. It's like when you watch Major League Baseball, they say, you know, disseminating accounts of the game without MLB's permission is prohibited. If you can't even talk to your friends.
Yeah, that could cover like
Red Sox beat the Yankees.
Yeah, that could cover like talking down at the barbershop with your buddy, probably, technically.
Yeah, that's right. It's crazy. And obviously fair use covers that. But there's a lot of kind of maximalist overprotection out there.
Well, doesn't the Constitution, the part of the Constitution that set the U.S. Constitution that set up copyright and patent, doesn't it use the language to protect for a limited time?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I actually, when I was at Stanford, we litigated the meaning of those three words all the way to the Supreme Court. It's for a limited time, and it's for the progress of the useful arts and sciences. So it's designed for the sort of public benefit. Increasingly copyright, we think that it's with the really, really long terms, it's got a bit out of control.
How do you personally feel about intellectual property? I mean, we had a friend of ours on here, Stefan Kinsella, who is a patent litigation attorney, who believes that patents and copyrights should be eradicated completely. Do you take it that far, personally?
I don't. I think that we overprotect intellectual property, and overprotecting intellectual property is just as bad, if not worse, than underprotecting it. Because, I mean, when you think about what a patent is, and you know, this will resonate, I think, with your listeners, is it's basically a piece of paper from the government that entitles you to money from other people's work. You don't have to show copying. You don't have to show that you contributed. So if you're Microsoft and you have a patent on touchscreen, and Google puts out a touchscreen phone, Microsoft can say, "Well, we deserve money from your phones, even if Google never copied them." And so at some level, like if you give those pieces of paper out too easily, then you're going to have lots and lots of people out there asking for money for other people's work. And that's actually where we've ended up in the patent system with all the patent trolling and the thousands of cases that get filed every year.
Well, speaking of patent trolling, the EFF is actually doing some work on that. And we actually at the Freedom Fiends helped record an audio ad to promote that. Tell the people a little bit about what you guys are doing, especially with regards to the patent troll case concerning podcasting.
I'd start by thanking you guys for recording that ad and putting it out there. So we are monitoring a lot of different patent troll cases, and we started to hear about podcasters getting letters from this troll, Personal Audio LLC. And Personal Audio also ended up suing a few people in the Eastern District of Texas, Adam Carolla, How Stuff Works, which is a Discovery Channel podcast, and they also sued some television companies down there. And so these guys, you know, they filed a patent back in the mid-90s, and it's basically directed to a personal audio device, like a handheld, you know, something that plays audio from the internet, but they decided a few years later that maybe buried in there somewhere is something that you could sort of twist to read it on podcasting. And so that you're able to go back to the patent office and refile with new claims. And they did that, and they say they have a patent on podcasting, and they're out there shaking people down, basically saying, you got to pay us up. And you know, we think this is a really bad situation. We don't think the patent is valid. And we actually filed a challenge at the patent office, which is a really big project, quite a lot of work. And, you know, the filing fees alone are $23,000. And so we're going to be fighting that patent in the patent office.
Isn't a big problem with patents that with software patents that in the mid-90s when computer patents for personal computer things and software started coming out, that you had patent examiners at the patent office who didn't know anything about it and were used to like examining jet engines and understood mechanical things but didn't understand software. I remember one patent that was granted and then revoked later was the patent. It was a really long paragraph, but it basically broke down to black text on a white background on a computer screen.
You know, I've heard of a lot of silly software patents, and that one is actually new to me. But yeah, you're exactly right. That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. Do they have any better examiners there now who actually understand software?
I think they do, but they don't.
We're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
The Electronic Frontier Foundation, or EFF, fights to protect your rights in the digital world. When a patent troll threatened podcasters, they fought back. EFF has also defended your right to encryption and has sued the NSA to end the government's mass, suspicionless surveillance. There are different ways you can help EFF, from donations, to signing petitions, to writing your representatives, to just spreading the word. Find out more at EFF.org. That's EFF.org.
Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. I am Nima Vidotti. We've got Michael W. Dean on the other end, keeping it trill. What it do, Mr. Dean?
Yeah, we're broadcasting. We're broadcasting live from a windowless bunker. Go, go, go.
Yeah, and it's not just me and you today. We've got Daniel Naser, like laser, but with an N. He's from the Electronic Frontier Foundation, more commonly known as the EFF, which is a Freedom Lovers BFF. And we were talking with Daniel about patent trolls, and now we wanted to get a little bit more specific with regards to what are they called? Personal audio, Michael? Is that their name?
Yeah.
Personal audio. Yeah.
I just call them big, ugly, green troll that marches across the land, stomping on children who want to listen to podcasts.
Right. Well, like you were saying a few episodes ago, or radio shows ago, if you will, the place where a lot of these patent trolls go is
Hades
in East... Well, not when they die, but right now. They go to a court in East Texas that's actually kind of favorable to patent trolls. I'm presuming a lot of that is the juries aren't really tech-savvy hipsters from Silicon Valley. Rather, they're, you know, your average resident of East Texas. Not saying that those people aren't necessarily the most tech-savvy.
And you're from Texas. You're not dissing people from Texas, but basically you're saying that these people would probably be better at litigating something involving patents on apple pies or tractors than on big software things that are lots of collections of zeros and ones that you need a science degree to understand.
Right. And so, Daniel, I guess, are you familiar enough with this stuff in East Texas? And
yeah.
What's your take on these patent trolls taking these cases specifically to that district?
Well, it's an interesting question. I've done a lot of litigation down there when I was in private practice, and actually went to trial in a really big case on Wi-Fi technology down there in Tyler, Texas. It's a place that really strikes fear into the hearts of defendants and technology companies around the country, and they really don't like litigating down there. I think it's not so much that the judges rule really favorably on merits questions about the like whether the patents are valid or not. I think what particularly the plaintiffs like down there is that the judges are very, very permissive on discovery, and so it's very, very expensive to be a defendant in an Eastern District of Texas case. And it's a very painful, I litigated cases where we were required to hand over millions of documents, and that costs millions of dollars to collect and review. And so even if you win the case, you're out all that money, and it puts a lot of pressure on the defendants to settle.
Well, and if it's discovery, doesn't that mean that it's in the public domain then, that it's on the public record? Anybody can go look at those documents? I mean, are there proprietary information? Or?
Yeah, with discovery, usually that stuff is in, particularly in patent cases, it's turned over under protective orders. So it usually stays relatively secret. Some of the most interesting stuff about the Eastern District of Texas, if I tell you a story about personal audio in the Eastern District of Texas, is the lengths plaintiffs go to get their cases down there. And so you might have heard on some other shows in the media that there's been stories about how there are all these shell companies, they claim to have offices in Marshall and Tyler. And when you go to these places, they're just empty. There's hallways of empty offices that no one ever goes to. And the only reason they're there is that so these companies can pretend they're based in Texas. And meanwhile, the person that really runs the show is playing golf in Wisconsin or Florida or New York or wherever. And personal audio is like that. They're run by folks who are in Boston and New Hampshire, and they really don't have any legitimate tie to Texas, certainly the Eastern District of Texas. In the CBS case, they're fighting about whether that case should go to New York, and they personal audio said, well, you know, our principal place of business is this address in Marshall. And they said, you know, suite 120 and such in Marshall. And it looks like from the docket, it looks like CBS hired a personal investigator named J.R. Skaggs, which I totally love, the Texas investigator called J.R. Skaggs. And J.R. Skaggs drove out there, and he found out it was a post office box rental place, and what they were calling suite 1800 or whatever, it was actually just a forwarding post office box. And, you know, that's not really a principal place of business. That's a sham.
J.R. Skaggs sounds like a name from the TV show Dallas. Like it would be a cop, a cop on the show Dallas.
Yeah. So, you know, I think, the juries are pretty.
Hang on a sec. We're going to be going to a commercial here and go to the free market, which does not involve patent trolls. It involves the free voluntary exchange of goods. We'll be back on the Freedom Fiends after this.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back just as soon as this drone is out of range.
This is Nima Vedati from the Freedom Fiends. Using government-printed funny money fuels and encourages wars abroad, and the wars at home against you and all you hold dear. Why should you remain beholden to self-appointed federal kings who don't care if you starve in a cage? Become your own king today by owning gold and silver from Midas Resources. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the Midas Resources banner over on the right, or go to gold.freedomfiends.com. That's gold.freedomfiends.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
Hey, this is Squisscar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
All right, welcome back to the Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. This is Nima Vedati out here in Austin, Texas. We've also got Michael W. Dean on the other end of the wires. How's it going, Mr. Dean?
Excellent, excellent, excellent. Freedom, right, man. Freedom, freedom feels good. And like I said, we're interviewing Daniel Nazer today from the EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And without the EFF starting in 1990, before most people knew what the internet was, I think by now the internet would be illegal or mandatory and would work like the Obama website, the Obamacare website.
Right, right. And one of the things that certain patent trolls are trying to rent seek and extract funds from people just going about their business, doing their free association, is there's patent trolls that are very particular to a district in East Texas. One in particular is trying to extract funds from people for downloading podcasts. They say that they invented the list of media that downloads automatically, if that were something somebody could invent.
This would be kind of like if patents had existed when restaurants started. Somebody could have patented a menu.
The menu,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, Daniel, what are some of the things or strategies that organizations like the EFF can take when companies try to litigate in these districts where that almost seems to be the niche of the district is being a forum for patent trolls? What kind of strategies or defensive measures can you take in a case like that?
It's a really tough question. If for smaller companies, usually they're just desperate to get out, so they're going to try and settle for as little as possible. Because a lot of companies, they just don't have the resources to fight. But if the big ones, when they're harassed by the real bottom feeder trolls with the bad cases, like we try and encourage people to stand up to them, because they actually, trolls lose almost every case that they're forced to litigate to judgment. So it's actually, they lose more than 75% of the cases that are litigated to judgment. And some companies like Twitter and Kaspersky Lab, a security software security company, they've made a real policy of like, we will not settle. We will make the troll fight us all the way to the end, and we're prepared to fight, and then we won't have a target on our back. And so that's pretty cool. Kaspersky recently fought a really bad troll all the way to trial, and the troll had been asking for $25 million, and when they realized that Kaspersky was not going to settle no matter what, they just dropped the case right before trial started, which sort of shows you really what the game is about.
Right, right.
Excellent.
Just trying to attack them and see if they can scare them into giving up the money rather than fighting.
So you're not just fighting bad individuals who look like trolls and march around stomping on children who want to listen to podcasting. You also fight the big boys. You have fought the NSA. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so the EFF, we're concerned with privacy and the Fourth Amendment and the right not to be spied on by the government. And the NSA has been doing that for a long time, and we've been suing the NSA since 2006. In January of 2006, a whistleblower from AT&T walked into EFF's office and told us about a room that AT&T and the NSA had built in a building in San Francisco where they were essentially splitting the cable so that the NSA was getting all the internet traffic.
I remember that. That was a big thing. I mean, people talk about the Edward Snowden thing as a big thing, but I remember that in 2006, and I've been saying to anyone who would listen forever that the government's spying on your phone calls and your internet, and people have called me crazy. I guess I'm not crazy.
Yeah, you know, and it turned out the Edward Snowden revelation showed that they're keeping what the government likes to call metadata for everyone's phone calls, and that's the record of who you called and how long. And so, you know, to the best of our knowledge, they're not recording everybody's calls, but this metadata, it reveals a lot. It reveals all your connections with your friends, with your work, with your hobbies, your church,
your things, where you go, all of that kind of stuff too, right? I mean, they can put together a picture of your habits and where you'll be.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a really big question at the moment of whether the government needs a warrant to get cell phone location data from us, whether they can just collect it sort of en masse with just a subpoena. And we've been litigating that all around the country with amicus briefs and other ways to try and make it clear that the Fourth Amendment, if it's to have any meaning in the modern world, it should protect this kind of information, which is really detailed and intimate.
But do you get the sense that the NSA's strategy here is not to first ask permission and try to figure out before they do these kinds of things whether or not they stand up to legal scrutiny? Or do you get the sense that what they're really doing is getting away with what they can get away with? And if people find out about it, then they'll try to justify it or fight the legal battle at that point once they're found out.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of both. I think in the early years of the Bush administration, they were really pushing the boundaries, and that so they ended up having to get retroactive immunity for a lot of the telecommunication companies they were getting data from. And in terms of where they are now is they're getting a lot of this information through the Patriot Act, and the way they did it is they go to the secret court called the FISC. And they were getting opinions from the FISC that were interpreting the Patriot Act extremely broadly. And those opinions were secret. So there was just no way to know what the law really was, because although, you know, you can obviously read the statute of the Patriot Act, that's public, but how it's interpreted is really key. And the reason they were getting everyone's telephone data was because they were interpreting, they'd convinced this court, the secret court, to interpret it really broadly. And we'd been fighting for those documents, those court records, for many, many years, and the government was saying they were too secret to turn over. But Snowden changed all that.
Well, one of the other things I'd like you to talk about is I'm looking at this article right now on techdirt.com, and the headline is 22 examples of NSA surveillance creating chilling effects. And it says that in the EFF's lawsuit against the NSA, the EFF has filed 22 firsthand examples of organizations which have directly experienced the chilling effects of the NSA surveillance. Go ahead and break down for us what kind of things the NSA is doing that actually creates a chilling effect, keeps people from freely associating, basically makes people scared to engage in their constitutional rights?
Right. So, you know, it's actually quite old lore that the government isn't allowed without, you know, really good cause and a warrant to inquire into, you know, who the members of an advocacy group are and what their connections are. And that's what the telephony metadata stuff does. And so we filed this case called First Unitarian Church versus the NSA, where we have a really diverse group of plaintiffs from, you know, really traditionally sort of liberal groups to gun rights groups, to just all kinds of different groups that are saying, we don't want the government spying on all of our connections, all of our communications. And so we actually filed a big summary judgment motion on that just this week.
That kind of brings up an interesting point. When I was younger, it used to seem that the pervading idea was that conservatives wanted small government, but wanted the government. They were more into like spying on people. Like Nixon was fired for spying on people. And it seemed like the Democrats were the good guys with civil rights. But it seems now like with politicians, both sides are cracking down on the people's rights. And it seems like both sides, at least the smart ones from the left and the right, are both pushing back. Do you feel like David fighting Goliath when you're going up against the NSA?
Yeah. Although there are a lot of Davids, you know, we've got a lot of groups in our suit, but it's definitely true. I mean, I really think that the Obama administration continued the spying regime, you know, almost completely from the Bush and the view of executive power that he has is really, really pretty extreme. And I think if Bush had a lot of things that he says, if Bush had said it, the liberals would be up in arms, and they've kind of quietened down because their, you know, their team is in office. But there are definitely people on both sides. You know, at EFF we have plenty of libertarian and liberal supporters, and I think folks because we have a pretty focused mission of defending constitutional rights online, we're able to build that alliance pretty effectively.
Well, there also seems to be some, I don't know if you'd call them wolves in sheep's clothing or false prophets, but your colleague there at the EFF, Trevor Tim, wrote an article about Senator Dianne Feinstein's new NSA bill, which she actually got – she was totally on board with the NSA, it seemed, when Snowden first came out and leaked. You know, she was very anti-Snowden. And then it seemed like when it's the revelations about the NSA actually spying on heads of state and officials from all around the world, then she all of a sudden got upset and had a dog in the fight. But the bill she seems to be putting forward actually codifies a lot of the horrible things that the NSA is doing, and according to Trevor Tim, in his words, extends the mass surveillance of Americans. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's totally right. It's quite interesting what she's done. She's proposed a bill that pretty much just codifies everything they're doing, and it allows them to collect this mass telephone data. But it's phrased in a way, and it's presented as if it's a reform bill. And it's quite interesting that DiFi seems to feel the need to the political need to pretend to be reforming, but it is a sham. This is a bill that solidifies what's going on and has some really just window dressing oversight that we don't think would be effective at all. So we're trying to get the word out that this bill is a sham, basically.
Okay. And so what can people do, people who are listening to this and say, well, I don't want to support the DiFi bill. I love how I've never heard that before, DiFi, that's great. But people who aren't on board with this kind of false reform, how can they support the EFF and what other things can they do to fight the good fight?
Right. So, I mean, keep an eye on our blog. We're at EFF.org, and we blog about these issues really regularly, so it's a good way to stay up to date with NSA spying. And when bad things happen, we usually put out an action alert and make it really easy for people to contact their representatives. And when good things happen, we do the same. So there is a bill from Senator Leahy that has some good reforms, and we'll
bring you back so you can finish that thought in just a little bit. We got to go to break.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Inoculation from indoctrination. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. Federal Reserve notes only have value because of a collective hallucination, whereas gold and silver are real, and so is their value. Gold and silver predate government-printed funny money, and they will undoubtedly outlive government-printed funny money. Get some gold and silver into your hands from Midas Resources by going to freedomfiends.com right now and clicking on the Midas Resources banner over on the right. Or go to gold.freedomfiends.com. That's gold.freedomfiends.com.
Creamy Radio Audio. Want caviar sound on a cat food budget? Creamy Radio Audio by the Freedom Fiends has great free tips so you can sound like a pro without spending like one. The most powerful form of human communication is one person speaking to another. But if people have to suffer through your sound, they'll change the channel and miss your message. With articles on microphones, preamps, recorders, mastering, recording remotely over the internet, doing a podcast, even getting a show on actual radio, the Freedom Fiends show you what they use and where to get it. Whether you're a talk show host, voiceover artist, podcaster, evangelist, or just want to record your loved ones for the ages, at Creamy Radio Audio, the Freedom Fiends will help you make the most of your sound. Creamy Radio Audio will help you speak to the world with sound that will make people want to keep listening. Check out creamyradioaudio.com. That's creamyradioaudio.com.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
All right, folks, thanks for sticking with us. This is the Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. We're at the bottom of hour one. We've been talking with Daniel Nazer of the EFF for the past little while. You can go to freedomfiends.com and check out the archive if you missed it. It's great stuff. Now, Daniel, you got cut off there before the last trip to the market. Go ahead and finish up your pitch on what people can do to fight the NSA, fight government intrusions into privacy in the online realm and the electronic realms. What can people do to help you guys and other groups that are fighting the good fight?
Well, I was saying, just staying informed is really key, and you can do that at EFF.org, at our blog. Encourage people to check us out and join us as members, and we get really cool stuff if you do that. We've got an NSA t-shirt with a great logo of the adapted logo of the NSA. Contact your representatives. You'd be really surprised how much impact, particularly calling the office of representatives, have. If they get a lot of calls, that really gets to their attention. So, if you doing something really does make a difference, particularly when a lot of people do. So, we encourage everyone to check us out at EFF.org.
Thanks a lot, man. It's been really good having you on. We appreciate it. We're honored to have you come on, and we're honored to help out the EFF. People can go to EFF.org. And if you are a radio programmer or broadcaster, we have a 30-second radio spot we made for the EFF. You can go to the freedomfiends.com site. If you can't find it, you can just email us at talkback@freedomfiends.com, and we'll send you the ad. All right. Thanks a lot, Daniel.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yep. Take care. Wow. That was cool, Nima. I like that.
It really was. Yeah. You learn something new every day. I did not know that people called Dianne Feinstein Di-Fi. I just love that. It's like death fidelity. Not only Dianne Feinstein, but death fidelity, because that's what she's true
to. She's faithful to death, to killing all things good.
Rights.
Yes.
Yeah.
And killing people. I mean, she's really, really pro-war and likes to drop drone bombs on babies in the Middle East.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Bombing Syria to help the Syrians. It seems like such a great idea if you're a Democrat, apparently. If you're a Republican, too, right?
Di-Fi wants to own your Wi-Fi.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go. Di-Fi wants to drone you. She wants to fiend drone you.
Yeah, well, because her dear leader is just so good at it. Did you hear that
drone.
Thing?
Fiend drone. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Yes, but apparently some staffers, some White House staffers, I think it was them, have told a story that Barack Obama was doing some...
Look what Obama's done to you today. Go ahead, Nima. Tell us what Obama's done to you today.
Yes, well, apparently he was deep in meditation... doing his thing, focusing on all of his deeds. And some people are saying that when he arose out of his meditative state, the first thing he said was, "I'm really good at killing people."
Wow. Do we have a source on that? I mean, that sounds like a zombie story. Like he woke from the dead and said something horrible.
Let's see. Washington Times.
Woke from his vampiric sleep. Yeah, I wonder if he sleeps in a coffin made from the skulls of murdered babies from the Middle East, that Obama.
Yeah, yeah. It looks like it was author Mark Halperin and also author John Heilemann. In their book Double Down, Game Change 2012, the president's specific words were, I'm, quote, really good at killing people. So the I'm is actually outside of the quote. So maybe it's taken out of context. Maybe not. I don't know. It seems eminently believable to me that the president of the United States of America would say something like that, because it's completely true. You know, as libertarians, we're always complaining about the things the government is horrible at doing, because it's horrible at doing a lot of good things. But if you think about what they're really there for, which is projecting their own power, keeping themselves in power, and dominating the weak, or who they perceive as weak or unpolitically connected, they're really good at that. And so President Barack Obama saying, I'm really good at killing people, it rings true to me. Now, why he would say it in a form where somebody can hear him and then go on to tell other people, I'm not sure.
They don't even care. They don't even care anymore. They're not trying to hide it. And we'll be back.
You think that's it?
We'll be back on the Freedom Fiends for hour two with more fiendy goodness with Cody Wilson, the printable gun guy, who's moving on to other things now.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
All right, it's the Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. I'm Nima Vedati here in Austin, Texas. We've also got Michael W. Dean out there in the wilds of Wyoming. How's it going, Mr. Dean?
Good. I'm broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural wild mountain west in the occupied states of America. And that was a great interview with Daniel Naser from the Electronic Frontier Foundation in the first hour. Didn't you enjoy that?
I enjoyed it thoroughly. And if you, the audience, enjoyed it, you can go back to freedomfiends.com, take another listen. If you have no idea what we're talking about, go ahead and do the same thing and you can listen to it and get schooled on what the EFF is doing to fight against patent trolls and the NSA, which, man, the NSA, is there anybody who likes them? Is there anybody who doesn't work for them already or is some kind of military industrial complex goon or some kind of politician? Is there anybody who's not one of those things that actually thinks the NSA is a good thing and should continue to exist?
No, I'm not sure. No. And they actually just made the head of the NSA just made a propaganda video that went on YouTube and broke the world record for most downvotes in one day on a YouTube video. Most thumbs down, throw him to the lions.
Yes, that's what I say. And isn't the head of the NSA kind of, I don't know what you'd say, a psychopath, a megalomaniac?
I don't know if you could say psychopath. I think that that is a medical designation. And okay. how much psychology diagnosis study did you get there at the Austin School of Media, Nima?
I didn't go to the Austin School
of Media.
Where'd
you go? So, what'd you do? What'd you take? You got a degree in something, hang on your
University
wall.
University of Texas at Austin. Yeah,
You're still paying back. You got some $70,000 yeah. piece of paper that's not helping you on your wall.
I don't know if it was that much. It helped me a little bit, I guess.
I'm looking at, I love our fans, man. Lusander Fiend just made a meme and posted it on Facebook based on what Daniel Nazer from the EFF said. He called Dianne Feinstein Di-Fi. We've never heard that. Maybe it's a San Francisco thing, but you take a picture of her and it says Di-Fi, nationwide coverage coming soon. Check with your local NSA provider for availability. Freedomfiends.com. Yeah.
But you got to love real-time memes. Something comes out of our mouths and eventually somebody like Lusander Fiend turns it into a meme, and it's a beautiful thing.
Yeah. It's you know, it's kind of what I dreamed of as a child, but you know, I was the only model I had as a child was politicians and kings. So, you know, so I figured I'd have an army making people do this for me and stealing money to I never had fantasies like that.
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah.
I thought I'd be a rock star and I would have beautiful women sitting around drawing things for me. I would say something wonderful and beautiful women would quickly draw it and put posters, print posters in my printing press and hang it all over the town. Although this is even cooler. We've got like,
didn't Leonardo DiCaprio play a character like that in that Titanic movie?
He drew things. But,
Okay.
No, he was a poor guy. He was. He didn't have power. He just had the power of his good looks and his
youth. I was trying to make the joke that he was one of the pretty girls who would draw things. It was a gender joke. Sorry. I won't attempt that one again.
No, he wasn't a Cortesian okay. in that movie. No, he was kind of the minstrel, I guess would be the archetype. He was the wandering guy with no money in his pocket that young ladies like to or any ladies, you know, that could just woo people by walking down the street and being smart and having talents.
Mm-hmm.
It's the minstrel.
There's pictures on places like Geekville that have people who drew a scale model of the door, the piece of wood that she's floating on, the female character at the end of Titanic, and shows all the different configurations that she could fit with somebody the size of Leonardo DiCaprio next to her.
DiCaprio.
Sorry, that was really a genuine slip of the tongue. I guess trying to make the point that he didn't have to freeze to death. They could have both fit on that thing.
You know, we haven't bashed Obama in over 10 minutes. We're going to get kicked off of talk radio. So
does an alarm go off?
Yes. Yes. So what has Obama done to you today, Nima?
Nothing yet that I know of. I'm sure there's plenty that he has done. I just sometimes don't pay enough attention to what Obama's doing to me. There's so many things.
Look what Obama's
trying to do.
Look what Obama's done to you today. We made a treason jingle. That's a joke. I was watching this show, Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, and they say something in there. This is like 10 years ago, and they say something along the lines of like, well, this is during Bush, and they're like liberals writing Saturday Night Live kind of skits. And they're like, well, maybe we shouldn't be over there bombing the Middle East back to the Stone Age. And some right-wing talk radio host declares that those writers, those liberal Hollywood writers who hate war, which you and I hate random, just blow everybody back to the Stone Age war that the Democrats seem to love now more than Bush did. But they declare that these two guys are the friends of Osama for the week. And they have a jingle and it goes, who's the friends of Osama? And and they said, and they're listening to it in their boss's office, who's telling them to tone it down, you know, for the advertisers. And they're like, really, these people, this talk radio station in Idaho actually wrote and recorded a treason jingle. And that inspired me to record my, I don't know if it's a treason jingle, but it's, this is me playing guitar and singing and my wife singing some backup. And it's Look What Obama's Done to You Today is the name of this piece of music. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Look what
Obama's
done to you today.
Okay, I'll fade it out while you tell us what Obama's done to you today.
Yes, well, I didn't see anything that he did today. Maybe he's taking a day off. It is Saturday.
He's resting in his coffin made of the bones of murdered children in the Middle East, from the Middle East.
But according to CBS News yesterday, he made this quip that I'm sure upset some people. He said, "I'd fix healthcare.gov myself, but I don't write code." All right, good for you. Powerful person in the world. You can't find somebody who can? You, the president of the whole American empire?
You know, this is kind of like Soviet Russia. The only thing that's missing is jailing people who laugh at the signature namesake legislation that fails out of the gate.
Yeah, and hopefully that doesn't come next. I mean,
DiFi is writing a bill. DiFi will just take over your internet, Dianne Feinstein. DiFi coming soon, coverage coming soon nationwide. She'll just make it so you can't physically do it. You know, they'll just take over your internet.
You saw how, I mean, in places like the United Kingdom, they don't have something akin to the First Amendment. So you see horrible stuff that are violations of journalism and free speech going on a lot quicker there than you do here.
Well, yeah, and the main internet provider in England is the phone company, and the phone company, British Telecom, BT, is the government. You pay your phone bill at the post office in England. I've stood in line in England to get stamps, and I've seen that in action. It's kind of weird. And it's a lot of people say, oh, well, the government should be in charge of things because, you know, then it's fair. And even the people that don't pay for it get it. And it's like, no, that leads to the government being able to tell you what to do on the internet, which is happening a lot quicker in England than here. Do you have some examples of that?
I do. I was going to bring up something that Justin Raimondo of antiwar.com recently wrote a column about, which was just mind-blowing to me. And this is, as you all know, Glenn Greenwald has been helping Edward Snowden in spearheading this data. I wouldn't call it a data dump, but all these revelations about the horrible things the NSA is doing. And in England, his partner, David Miranda, and by partner, I don't mean necessarily a business associate, but more of a life partner, who lives with him in Brazil, was trying to fly back to Brazil, and he had to go through an airport in Great Britain. They detained him, held him for 9 hours, which is the total legal amount they can hold him on, quote, terrorism charges. And so obviously Glenn Greenwald is not happy about this. This happened a while ago. But recently, read into the court record was some statements that basically do a mental switch, a linguistic switch that substitutes terrorism for journalism. So now something that we would call journalism is actually called terrorism, according to English courts. I'm going to read this paragraph from this British legal document. It says, intelligence indicates that Miranda is likely to be involved in espionage activity, which has the potential to act against the interests of UK national security. We assess that Miranda is knowingly carrying material, the release of which would endanger people's lives. Additionally, the disclosure or threat of disclosure is designed to influence a government and is made for the purpose of promoting a political or ideological cause. This, therefore, falls within the definition of terrorism. Now, pause. Think about that. So, speech, information that makes the government feel scared or terrified is now called terrorism. In England, how soon till the United States government can say something that blatant? I mean, because that's what we do, man. And you're always worried that, you know, we have all these jokes about listen to us before you get droned.
I'm so blatant that, you know, we were talking about normal things and I felt like we hadn't had our quota of poking the president. And I would do that regardless of who it is, that I had to play my treason jingle.
Yeah, exactly. But we recognize that, as any sane person does, as discussion,
what's up,
speech,
Wilson?
The exchange of ideas.
What?
Do we have Cody Wilson on the line? I think we do. But yeah, here, at least among sane people, the disclosure or threat of disclosure of information that the government doesn't like, man, that's our right. That's what we're supposed to do. That's what me and Michael spend so many hours a day doing and promoting. And that just seems like it's what people want to hear. It's how the state ends eventually, which I guess is why they're cracking down on it so hard, because they know that the real threat to the state's continued existence, the real threat to the growth of their power, is labeling people who stand and speak truth to power and speak against that power and let people know just what horrible things powers like the NSA and the GHQ or whatever they call it over there in Great Britain, just what evil things they're doing.
Breaking news. I just talked to Cody Wilson, the printable gun guy. Yeah, he just got out of the TSA where they tie you up and probe you and do all sorts of things to you and rub themselves while they're doing it. He just got out of that at the airport. So we're going to have him on for 6 minutes after the break before he goes and catches his plane. And then we're going to have him back in like a month. So, yeah, Cody Wilson, the printable gun guy who's changing the world with disruptive innovation and basically came up with the printable gun and then went on to something else. And he's going to tell us about the something else. He lost his dark wallet on the plane, so we're going to have him talk about it. We'll be back on the Freedom Fiends.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
Since time began, tyrants have taken aim at personal liberties. Now there's a movie that aims back.
The government has no more right to tell us what to put in our bodies than they have to take our guns or tell us what books we can read.
Six drug police were eaten by bears while raiding a marijuana farm.
On your knees, you dirty hippies! Jesus. On your knees!
What's the problem, officer?
Today, many cops who enforce pot laws do so only because it provides them with cushy jobs, good benefits, and a chance to push people around.
I was an undercover narcotics officer. The drug war is nothing but a farce.
The Second Amendment says you gotta keep you and your gat intact.
Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. A film by Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadavi.
DVD available now at gunsandweed.com or on Amazon. That's gunsandweed.com. Makes the perfect gift. Remember, that's gunsandweed.com.
Yeah, this is the Freedom Fiends, Freedom Fiends. And we got a little interview here really quick with Cody Wilson, the printable gun guy. Nima Vadadi had to step out. He had to return. He was on his work release from Gitmo. And Cody Wilson is at an airport. We were going to have him on for an hour, but flights got moved up. Flights got moved back. Flights got moved around. I think he was hanging out with getting whipped by the TSA or something like that. Are you there, Mr. Cody Wilson, the printable gun guy?
Hey, Michael. Yeah, I'm here, man.
All right.
My freedom pat took a little longer than expected.
Did it tickle? Was it fun?
Yeah, you brought me flowers. It was a beautiful experience.
You sound like you're out of breath. What did they do to you in that airport?
Look, man, you know, I'm out of shape. I asked my doctor, I don't know if my heart is healthy enough for sexual activity.
I don't know if your heart is healthy enough. I would ask him if my heart is healthy enough to like be doing disruptive innovation that makes the government want to drone you, like the printable gun. And what's your new project? Since we only got you on for about 4 minutes here, talk about Dark Wallet and what it is.
Okay, I will. Dark Wallet is a Bitcoin platform, basically a separate back end that allows basically for money laundering. All right, let's just put it out there in the open. An extra layer of financial privacy and security for your Bitcoin transactions. And a lot of developers aren't moving in this direction because, one, it doesn't directly interest them from a business perspective. And two, you know, they're afraid of regulation, direct regulation. So there's not a lot of anarchists developing cool new stuff in Bitcoin. It's kind of trending toward more mainstream, you know, adoption and features like that.
Why would someone want to use something like that and not have every transaction they're doing seen by everybody?
I'm on the phone. How long can I stay right here?
TSA is patting them down.
You're saying, why would someone use my...
Why would someone want to do that? Yeah.
I think in the end, it comes down to interest. I mean, if you want to use a secure wallet like Electrum that's light and thin and in your browser, it might be an aesthetic choice. Oh, this is easier for me to use Bitcoin. It also, like, we're developing Bitcoin as a kind of layer of your web experience. So we really do hope to have a better user experience and integration with your web browsing. But at the same time, I hope ideologically interested parties would use it because it supports their vision of the development of Bitcoin and, you know, the increase in the features of financial privacy and financial freedom of speech. So you would use it because the features work and protect your interest.
When you said it's for money laundering, you were kidding, right? You were thinking that's how someone might look at it?
Well, I was using it the crass definition of what we were doing. But in the end, it's these liberal institutions that define money laundering as well, doing things with the transactions that we can't see. You know, oh, it's illegitimate. Well, no, in the end, it's no one's business how you do your transactions, how you bundle them, or what the paper trail ends up looking like. And so this is kind of why we market it as dark wallet. We want to hide, right? We want the channels to go dark. It doesn't matter what you do with your Bitcoin. And increasingly so, they won't be able to see what you do with it.
Yeah, and governments literally launder money all day long, every day. A classic example I can think of is the first Bush administration. Weren't they doing something with, like, selling cocaine to fund enemies of our friends or something?
Oh man, you know, that stuff's like that stuff's nothing compared to the great stuff from the past 10 years. Like Standard Charter's $250 billion, you know, for Saudi Arabia and Iran and all these rogue states, and HSBC was kind of caught with their pants down laundering money for Hezbollah and groups in with the Muslim Brotherhood. And I mean, yeah, man, if you want your money laundered, where do you go? You go to a institutional, consensual, liberal bank.
Yeah.
It's the open secret. Everybody knows it.
So you lost your wallet on the plane, your physical wallet. How would that be different with dark wallet?
I'd love it. That's a great one. I did. Yeah. I don't know where my wallet is. My wallet's gone dark. I guess this is a way of handling Bitcoin and actually doing Bitcoin. So it would be just a kind of browser extension, kind of plug and play, like in your browser. And basically, like, as long as you don't lose your browser or your computer, you know, you're not facing the same kinds of material physical consequences.
Yep. And we'll explain what Bitcoin is for people who don't know after you catch your plane and we have Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, come on here. It's been really good having you on. Very shortest interview I've ever had anyone do. It's been fun.
Sorry,
no, it's okay. You are in an airport. You are basically in a prison with wings. You know, you're under their control.
Man. Dude, I fell outside of the financial grid for a little bit. I had to call American Express and ask them politely to let me back in so I could have some food, you know. I haven't eaten all day. So it's like really, it's really powerful how these institutions keep you at subsistence level if you don't carry their numbered pieces of, I think it's what John the Revelator was talking about by the Mark of the Beast, by the way.
Yep. And if you had dark wallet, I could have just sent you some lunch money and you could have paid me back later. And thanks,
no,
Cody.
Man. All right, thanks a lot.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back just as soon as this drone is out of range.
Do you want to raise your children outside of the government indoctrination camps that are today's public schools? Check out the Ron Paul Curriculum link over on the right of freedomfiends.com. The Ron Paul Curriculum is a liberty-based K-12 homeschool course. It covers history, liberty, geography, math, science, and free market economics. Kindergarten through fifth grade are free. Then it's only $250 per family per year. Click on the Ron Paul Curriculum link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Hey, this is Nathan Explosion from Death Clock, and you're listening to Freedom Fiends on the radio. Worms.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available And you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiend's message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Yeah, Freedom Fiends. This is Mr. Michael Dean, broadcasting from my windowless bunker. And Nima Vidadi had to return to Gitmo. He was on the work release program from Gitmo. He had to cut out early. And they dropped off Ben Stone because he's available on his Gitmo work release today. How you doing there, Ben Stone, the bad Quaker?
Hey, Michael, how are you?
Good. That was a pretty feisty interview, a frantically feisty interview with Cody Wilson. It was like he was getting probed by the TSA while we were interviewing him, I think. It was so short and brilliant and sharp. A short, sharp interview, as it were.
I really liked it, even though it was brief, but we probably should talk a little bit about Bitcoin and what they are and how they work.
What's Bitcoin, Ben?
Funny you should ask, Michael. Bitcoin is essentially an electronic way to move value. We can think of it in terms of money, but you can move the value of money from one person to another without a third person involved. And really, that's the beauty of it. And there's all kinds of different ways that you can describe how that takes place, and you can describe how Bitcoins are created and why there's going to be a limited number of them. They can never have hyperinflation. Why they're not a true fiat money, as you know, like the US dollar is a fiat money. There's all kinds of aspects that we could go into, but the really important thing to realize is that they're a very, very secure way to privately move value from one person to another. And you can do that for free, or you can go through a third party and they can kind of act as an in-between, and they'll generally charge a very small amount for that. But the real beauty of Bitcoin is the ability to have a private exchange between two individuals with nobody else involved. Now, there used to be a day when all exchange was like that before government decided that they wanted to cut. they wanted to wet their beak in every single transaction.
Yeah, and what Cody Wilson is working on, people who don't know who Cody Wilson is, I'm sure you've heard of the fact that there are now printable guns. Cody Wilson, the guy we had on the interview before the break, is the inventor of the printable gun. And instead of working on that more, he basically released it to the world without patents, without copyrights, without anything, and said, all right, I did a proof of it. He uploaded a video of him shooting his prototype, shooting one shot of 380 from it. It looked like, it's so bizarre, it's plastic and bulbous. It kind of looks like it's something you would spray your garden with. You know, it looks like a hose attachment for like adding fertilizer or something, but it's a gun, and he made one. And then other people have made better ones that can fire more than one shot and that are more reliable and can fire bigger calibers than a 380. And he's moved on. He's left that behind him and given it to the world and letting the world take over. And he's working on Dark Wallet, which is a proposed method of transmitting Bitcoins even more securely than are done now, basically by automatically encrypting the transmission and automatically basically taking everybody's transactions, mixing them together, and then redistributing them. It's not redistributing the wealth. It's basically you get the same amount of wealth, but it doesn't have an identifier on it that can show this person sent this to this person. It's a brilliant idea. He's got some brilliant people working on it. He did an online fundraising the other day and made like $35,000 in a week, which is enough to fund this thing. And he's moving on, and it's pretty cool, and we like it, and we support the idea of it. And basically, you know, something Daniel Nazer talked about in the first interview, in the first hour, was about how governments tend to be really bad at catching up with technology and regulating things, even in a way that people who like regulation would consider fair. We don't consider any regulation fair here on the Freedom Fiends. But he was talking about in 1990, when most people had not heard of the internet, the guy who founded the electronic freak, the EFF, John Perry Barlow, who was actually a libertarian from Wyoming, who was a co-lyricist for the Grateful Dead. A lot of people don't know that. And he got raided by not the usual raiders, but it was the Secret Service raided him because he had some borrowed computer code that he wasn't doing anything with. And he had to actually, you and I did a show the other day, Ben, about how he had to explain to the agents raiding him what they were getting. They didn't understand cyberspace because very few people did back then. And the government just said, oh, you have something that exists somewhere else. You're a thief. And it's not really the same thing. The original thing still existed. John Perry Barlow wasn't doing anything with what he had. He just had it. And the laws hadn't really caught up, and they still haven't. They've caught up in the wrong direction, and the EFF has put a lot of damper on that. Now, Cody Wilson is into disruptive innovation. He came out with, you know, things that shake up the market and change the world with one invention, like the light bulb, like radio, like the internet, like, you know, DVDs replaced, like destroyed VHS tapes, that kind of thing. And he came up with the printable gun, which certainly hasn't destroyed general gun manufacturing yet. Somebody sinter printed a metal gun the other day that's more accurate and can fire a 45 and carry a regular clip, you know, a regular mag. It's a copy of a 1911. But it's the printers for those are extremely expensive and require skill. The printers for the printable guns you can get for $500 to $1,500, and they require a lot less skill and practice to print the guns. So he's moving on to another disruptive innovation. And really, like, I think he is going to be remembered in 100 years the way people remember Thomas Edison now. I really do. Or Ben Franklin.
I consider him a hero. I whenever I talk about Cody, I refer to him as a hero, because a hero does what other people are maybe hesitant to do because of the repercussions, and he just sees the need for it to be done, and he goes in and he does it anyway. And he doesn't, it's not that he doesn't care what's going to happen. He just knows that it's his responsibility to do it because he can.
Yeah, a lot of people are called heroes who aren't. People who you know, do, like the people who call 911 when somebody needs, you know, an ambulance. That's not really a hero. A hero, the definition, literal definition, is someone who risks their life for strangers. And Cody is risking his life for strangers. He's risking his life in prison and, you know, being droned or being shot. I mean, that could happen these days by the government. He's risking his life and definitely his freedom to innovate in ways that will help the world and save people from the massive boot on the neck that are all governments.
There's a really solid connection, too, between what was happening in 1990 with the EFF and what's happening today with Bitcoin. You know, we have a government, a thing is happening. In 1990, it was the internet developing into the World Wide Web. And the governments didn't know what to do with it. They didn't understand it. They were afraid of it. They had no clue. The law hadn't caught up yet. And today, Bitcoin is very much like what the World Wide Web was like in about 1990 or 1991.
Or what computers were like in 1950 and 1960. I mean, basically, if the government could freely regulate everything they want to regulate without people like the EFF suing them and without people like Cody Wilson just doing it anyway, literally, like, a computer wouldn't be a phone that fits in your pocket and can talk to the whole world and access all the information of the world and cost a few hundred bucks and then cost 30 or 60 bucks a month to use. A computer would still be something that takes up a whole floor of an office building that, you know, weighs 20 tons, costs $20 million, and requires a team of scientists in lab coats to program it, and takes, you know, overnight to solve a simple mathematical problem that you can do on your calculator now on your iPhone.
Yeah, and like if you take a moment in history, like 1970, the Cody Wilsons of 1970 were people like Steve Jobs and guys like that who just went into their mom's garage and started building what they wanted. They didn't wait for the government to give them permission.
Yes, yes. So disruptive innovation, that's a really good term, and I'd like to explore that a little bit. Do you know that term?
I just heard it today, and I like it.
Yeah, there's a... Let's go to the Wikipedia page for disruptive innovation and see what it has to say. I'm going to send you, using Pigeon, my encrypted, random text so they can't, yeah, okay, there. I sent you an encrypted file for something I'm mentioning on the internet. A disruptive innovation is an innovation that helps create a new market and value network and eventually goes on to disrupt an existing market and value network over a few years or decades, displacing an earlier technology. And I think that the stuff that Cody's coming up with, I think that the network that it's replacing is government intrusion. You know, it's not necessarily going to replace conventional gun manufacturing. It's not going to replace people buying things in gold or storing gold. It's going to be an add-on to that that's just going to make it impossible for pencil-necked bureaucrats backed with armies of thugs and, you know, bureaucrats carrying 40 cal Glocks handed to them by the DHS, people who have no love of guns, people who have no knowledge of how to use guns, people who are trained in a safety course that lasts about 20 minutes, you know, taught by some government goon hired off a pizza box. Those are the people that want to stop innovation. They really do. I mean, it's kind of interesting to me because the definition, the mission statement of the FBI when it was formed was to protect interstate commerce. And a lot of the things that they went after before the mission creep made them what they are today was anyone interfering with interstate commerce. And I would say that by definition, all government activity interferes with interstate commerce. Would you have some examples of that, Ben Stone?
Sure. Sure. Let's see. Examples of government interfering with interstate commerce. Well, think about something like I don't smoke cigarettes, but think about something like cigarettes, which are essentially just, you know, some leaves rolled up in paper. And you think about how much they cost, and you think about how much the price is distorted, and then how much it's distorted from state to state and across international lines.
Cigarettes are like $15 a pack in New York City now with the local taxes.
And what that does, in among many other things, is
black
it creates
market.
An opportunity, exactly, for criminals to make money that they then use to support criminal activity, such as, you know, robbery and extortion and other bad things.
And shooting the competition. I mean, you know, there's a classic line in the movie Neem and I made, Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom, which you can go watch online, or you can download the whole thing, or you can on our BitTorrents, or you could buy it on Amazon if you want to buy it. In that movie, one of the interviewees says something amazing, which I really like, is that, you know, he's talking about marijuana prohibition. And again, we don't smoke marijuana, but we support anyone's right to do anything that's not hurting anyone else. And gun owners should be against the war on drugs, because the war on drugs is training for kicking in your door and taking your guns. It really is. And there's an interviewee in that movie who says that, you know, during Prohibition, you had, you know, mafia gangs in New York and Chicago shooting it out in the streets. And now that alcohol is legal, you never see a Budweiser truck shooting it out with a Miller Lite truck. And we'll have more in the final segment on the Freedom Fiends with Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, filling in for Nima Vidati after this trip to the free market.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. That proves you're smarter than most people.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean. Available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
The
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Yeah. You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, and this is Michael W. Dean from The Freedom Fiend, and our guest in this hour is Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, from the Bad Quaker podcast at badquaker.com. That's BADQUAKER.com. Not Bad Quacker, Bad Quaker. How you doing there, Ben?
I'm doing great, Michael. It's nice to be back on the big show again.
Well, I think there's going to be more of you on the big show coming up here because Nima's wife is about to drop another wonderful life into this world in less than a month here. So he's going to take some, paternity leave. Yeah, he's going to be, you're going to be on call, if you're okay with that, for the next, 8 weekends probably.
I'm here for you.
Yeah. Yep. Hey, that guarantees at least one more listener. Now we have hundreds of thousands of listeners, and we're not taking phone calls today, but we will be tomorrow. And I wanted to tell a little story. I watched this documentary about the rise of crack in America and the suggestion that maybe the first Bush administration had something to do with it. And there was a couple of interesting things in it. One was Richard Price, the screenwriter of Clockers, who's in my movie Hubert Selby Jr., It'll Be Better Tomorrow. And he said the war on drugs is like raking leaves on a windy day. What do you think of that, Ben?
That's very accurate, except the only thing is you don't have one group of people growing politically in power just from
raking leaves.
Raking leaves.
Yeah, that's true. But they said something really interesting about most Americans' first knowledge of the fact that there was this thing called crack, which some have said was invented by the CIA, but we don't know that. It just kind of sprang onto the scene and turned normal families into violent offenders because it's illegal. But George Bush the first went on TV at night and interrupted primetime TV and looked gravely into the camera and held up a bag, a pound of crack in a plastic bag, and said, "This was purchased today. This was taken in a drug bust today, where someone sold this in the park across the street from the White House." And a Washington Post reporter kind of raised his eyebrows and was like, "That park? Lafayette Park? No, man, that's, and he went there and he looked around. And he's like, "I don't see anything that looks like drug dealers here." And it turns out the speech writers for the president wrote this speech about a week earlier, and they wrote this in. They thought it would be great to say, yeah, this was bought across the street, and they wanted a prop. So they did a buy bust, with somebody. They found some drug dealer and said, like, yeah, some young guy from the hood in D.C. and set him up so they could factually say that they bought this across the street from the White House where no drug sales were taking place. They called the guy up and they said, "Yeah, we come meet us for the sale. Meet us in Lafayette Park." And he said, "Where's Lafayette Park?" And they said, "Across the street from the White House." And he said, "Where's the White House?" So that's like how hilarious proof of like, there was no drug activity across from the street from the White House. The government had to manufacture some, and they did, so they could say this on TV. And a Washington Post reporter busted him, did some research and proved it. And, today, Obama, who said he was going to have the most transparent institution of learning and tyranny of any president, is doing quite the opposite. He's jailed more whistleblowers than George W. Bush, who jailed a lot of whistleblowers and who was the idiot son of that head of the CIA, former head of the CIA guy, Bush, who lied and held this prop up on TV and said it was bought across the street from the White House.
Government lie to me? That's impossible.
Well, my first impression of the way the world worked was, let's see, I was born in 1964, and whenever Nixon got kicked out, I don't know, what was it, 70, 71, 69, something along that. I was a little kid. I was 6, 7, 8, something like that. And I saw him live on TV do his "I am not a crook," you know, speech, where he was basically resigning because he was going to get impeached and possibly arrested. And I turned to my mother and I said, "Mommy, but isn't the president supposed to be the most bestest, smartest man in the world who never lies?" And she looked at me and she said, "It's kind of complicated, Michael."
It's a complicated relationship.
Yeah, like on Facebook. She go on Facebook and friend the White House and then say your friendship with them is complicated, because it is, because they always have the upper hand. Thanks, Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker at badquaker.com, for being on the Freedom Fiends today. And we'll be back with more Feeny goodness tomorrow on select stations and freedomfiends.com. Thank you, and worms.
Thank you for listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Make an appointment to listen while it's still legal. Learn more about the Fiends and download archived shows at freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFeens.com.